in 2018. Okay. And everybody's got to say, got it, good, okay. Also went to Yeshiva College. He's at the Technion, and I think that one of the other people are coming on tonight, Yitz Moskowitz. Was he at the Technion? I think he went to Technion, I'm not sure. But he's at the Technion, and he's in his fourth year of medical school, and is the fourth year he's doing in the United States. What I found fascinating in his resume is that I've quoted Rabbi David Blech many times. He's a research assistant for Rabbi Blech. And something that's very, very close to Rabbi Cohen's heart is the whole concept of a medical ethics, a halacha in medicine. And we thought that this would be a perfect lead-in for the first this four-week series about medical devices and halacha, how it fits into Shabbos, just how it fits into the everyday goings-on. So for Rabbi Cohen, it's all yours. And I said, I'm going to just go on, knock off my video, and it's all yours, Rabbi Cohen.
Thank you very much. So first of all, I just wanted to share my email. It's in the chat. If anybody has any questions, wants to follow up afterwards, please feel free to send me an email. So as Rabbi Shore mentioned, we're discussing medical. This is a series on medical devices. Probably have more than 4 weeks worth of shiurim, but we'll start and see where we end up. I've been thinking about these topics for actually quite some time. So I'm very excited about this opportunity to be able to present these topics to you in a formal way. Please feel free to ask questions as I go through. I love interruptions. I like when you ask questions as well as we go through the presentation. So for the first for today at least, I want to discuss what I'm calling halachic talking. What I'm including in that category are things like hearing aids, that's our medical device, microphones, and telephones. Now, the reason as far as categories are concerned here, a lot of people, when they discuss this issue, they also discuss things like cochlear implants or some of these newer advanced hearing aids. I'm separating the two topics. Because I think there's really two different halachic questions over here. One halachic question is what is considered halachic talking. The other one is what's considered halachic hearing. I'll explain what I mean by question. If a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? Right. So really, it depends on who you ask. Right. If you ask a physicist, obviously it made a sound. There was a sound wave produced. Right. When a tree falls, there's sound waves. Sound waves is sound. Therefore, obviously there is sound. If you ask the biologist, he might argue that's not true. There is no one heard the sound. There was nothing to receive the sound. What's actually considered sound is actually something processing that sound wave. I think that's really the difference between these two questions. When you're talking about microphones or hearing aids, which function similar to microphones, I'll explain more in a minute. What you're basically referring to is sound being produced. So when you're talking about sound being produced, the question is, what is attributed to the person that's making the sound, that we could say that it's as if the person is actually talking? So for example, if I blow a shofar into a microphone and all you hear is the speaker on the other end, or you're over the phone and you're hearing it in a different room altogether, does it consider that I'm actually hearing the shofar or not? Or maybe I'm just hearing the sound from the phone. When you talk about cochlear implants, it's fundamentally different. Cochlear implant is just basically replacing your ear. So there it's a question about, am I hearing what a person has to hear the shofar in order to fulfill his obligation? So that's a question of, am I hearing? That's a totally different question. That's a question we'll discuss either next week or the week after, depending on how much we get through tonight. I do apologize for my voice. I just got over COVID and I was able to speak for the last 3 days and I got a lot of steroids. I was told that should get me through this year, no problem. I apologize if my voice is coming in or out. So I just want to first just give general background information. If you're comparing how a person speaks versus what happens when we use a microphone. So when a person speaks, right, your brain basically sends a signal that it wants to make a sound, whatever that sound is. Your lungs send out air. They go through your vocal cords, which can then, depending on exactly how they're positioned, they then make a certain sound. That sound then gets depending again on how your mouth is positioned and how the rest of the tract is open, that produces different sounds. And that's how we speak. What happens after I do that process is I produce a sound wave. That sound wave that eventually goes over to somebody's ear, and that ear then processes that sound wave, turns it into neurological stimuli, an electrical signal, which the brain processes, and that's how they hear. So if you just focus on that first part, right? So biologically, talking is producing sound waves. What happens with a microphone, and this is hearing aids, telephones, microphones, they all function the same. They all function the same way. They have a microphone picks up the signal, picks up the sound wave, and then converts it into an electrical impulse, right? Which then gets converted back into a sound wave at the speaker. So basically, it picks up a sound wave, converts to electrical, and then back to a sound wave, and then that goes to, you know, that sound wave travels to somebody's ear, which then processes it and is then able to hear it. So that the question is, the halachic question is what is considered talking? What is halachically considered sound that a person produced in order to fulfill obligations? There are two, I mean, this comes up all over in halacha when you're talking about being, let's say if you hear kiddush from someone on Friday night, you have to hear kiddush from them. You have to hear the chazan davening, right? Can they use a microphone in those situations? If I hear the speaker instead of hearing directly from the chazan, do I fulfill my obligation? The two big areas of halacha that are primarily discussed are Megillah, reading the Megillah, specifically Megillat Esther on Purim, and blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. If you have, especially those two holidays where you have a lot of people in shul, it's sometimes hard to hear. So people wanted to know if they can use a microphone in order to amplify the sound so other people can hear. So that is really the basis of the question. What we're going to try to focus on tonight is we're really going to focus on one general outlook of how to think about these questions, and that is that when you're using a microphone to either completely or to some degree, that is considered halachically as a human being talking. It's the same thing, and therefore you can fulfill your obligation. It's important to note that the reason why we're going to compare and contrast Megillah and Shofar is because these are two. There are potentially specific criteria by Shofar that don't apply anywhere else in halacha. Megillahs are example of every other time in halacha where there's a requirement to hear somebody talking. Shofar, there's a din, there's a halacha, there's this requirement that it cannot be what's called in the Gemara a kol ha'avara. Now, what exactly does kol ha'avara mean is a great question. It's a debate, obviously, as all good things in Judaism are. But basically, the classic example is that you blow a shofar into a pit, and then the sound that you hear is really the echo, not just the shofar. You hear the echo that's being produced because it's from a pit. And so for whatever reason, an echo is not good, halachically, and you cannot fulfill your obligation of shofar that way. So the question is, what exactly is the issue there? So let's start with the Minchas Elazar. His name is Rabbi Shapiro. I have also, can you see that I switched to this other tab? You see? Okay, great. So he's our person all the way on the left here. I have these in orders. So he was the Rebbe of the Mumkach Hasidim. He lived, as you can see, in 1868. So this is from a long time ago. The dates might also end up being important as we continue the discussion. I'll point out why. So he was born in 1868. So obviously this is when microphones, this is towards the beginning of the era of microphones. I actually didn't look at the history of when exactly microphones were produced, but you can assume that, you know, the sound quality wasn't all that great. So he makes the case. So first of all, his tshuva in general is very interesting. He's not asking whether or not the primary focus of his response has nothing to do with Megillah or Shofar. In general, there's halacha that if I make a bracha, right, and you hear the bracha, then you fulfill your obligation. But the exception to that is if I make a bracha and there's, let's say, a dirty diaper in between me and you, So then you won't fulfill your obligation because there's something dirty sort of separates us halachically. So you won't fulfill your obligation. So what he was addressing is if I speak into a microphone on this side, there's a dirty diaper between us, but the speaker is on your side. So can you fulfill the obligation? Because the sound was really heard on the opposite side. Now, by the fact that he's even addressing this question, obviously he thinks that sound heard over a microphone, over a speaker, is considered halachic sound. That was never a debate. He agrees that that sound is attributed to the human voice. And his only question is, does that the fact that there's something dirty in between, is that something that would halachically separate us? Now he says, no, he argues that it doesn't. Others disagree. He doesn't think that it's an issue and that you will be able to fulfill your obligation. What is more interesting and more relevant for our discussion is that he adds on the end of his response that, which is, you can see it's 3 pages here. And at the end over here of his response, he says, the reason why shofar doesn't work is because it's a mixed sound. He doesn't explain what a mixed sound means. Okay. But if you just read the words, it sounds like he thinks that when you blow a shofar into a microphone, the sound that is produced is not just the sound from the shofar going into the microphone, which is then converted into the electrical signal inside the computer there, which is then produces a sound wave from the speaker. It sounds like he thinks that the sound waves that are produced are a combination of both that electrical signal plus the actual shofar that was blown. However, since by shofar we have a requirement that it's not kol havara, that vague term that we discussed before. So since there's a kol havara, so a shofar would not be able to fulfill your obligation of hearing the shofar. Now, it's hard to know what to do with this position because it's possible he just didn't understand how microphones worked. And if he did understand how a microphone worked, then he would tell me that it's obviously not a mixed sound. The sound is purely just the sound of the speaker. And since he doesn't think there's a problem with hearing sound from a speaker halachically, he would say that even a shofar is allowed. What is interesting, though, and what we potentially can more clearly determine from his tshuva, is if anyone has any of the newer AirPods, or I have the Jabra version of them, but there's a function on these that they do both. They have a hear-through option, which basically, since they're stuck in your ears, it's hard to hear, right? So what they do is they pick the microphone in that in the AirPod earbuds, the earbuds, sorry, also pick up the surrounding sound and allow you to hear it easier, which means, since they don't totally seal off your ear, what you're actually hearing is really a mixed sound. You really are hearing the sound of the shofar plus the sound that's going through the AirPod. So that might actually be a better example of what Rabbi Shapiro would argue is not something that would be allowed to be used for shofar, but you can use it for, let's say, Megillah or for davening or for any one of those other things. So that's our first position. The second position is presented by the Tzitz Eliezer. That's what he called his response. He has many volumes. He was the rabbi of Shaarei Tzedek Hospital. He's the second person here. As you can see, he died in 2006. He's relatively recent. He definitely had good quality, microphones around, and he should have definitely known how they worked. So the problem is that he also describes a mixed sound when he discusses microphones. So I suspect that what he actually means is there is a mixed sound when you're blowing a shofar in shul. Because when I blow a shofar in shul, it makes sense that when I blow into the microphone, I apologize again. It makes sense that when you blow it to the microphone, you can hear two things. You hear both the actual shofar, plus you hear the speaker. He wouldn't make the same argument if you're blowing the shofar into a telephone and someone hears it, you know, a couple of miles away. That's obviously not a mixed sound. This issue is only a mixed sound when you're actually in the shul. So there he makes the case that on Rosh Hashanah, that would be a problem. For blowing shofar, that would be an issue. But for Megillah, that's not a problem. Now, I just want to point out that this actually has some halachic ramifications as well, this idea of a mixed sound inside a shul, because there's a rabbi in L.A. who also is a prolific writer, Rabbi Reichman, discussed a lot of medical halachic issues. He has a very creative imagination, and he comes up with a lot of interesting halachic dilemmas that he likes to discuss. But anyway, in his introduction to, I think, his essay on cochlear implants, which is not what we're discussing now, but he mentions there that the last Siyama Shas, where they had that whole gathering after they finished Shas, so not the one a few years ago, the one before that, so whatever that was, 9 years ago, he was supposed to daven mincha. And he was concerned because he was daven mincha speaking into a microphone. And he knows that everyone agrees that when you daven into a microphone, not all halachic authorities would agree that that's a good way to daven because not everyone's actually hearing the voice of the chazan. So he was told that apparently Rabbi Eliashiv, that has since died, but it said it was okay because there were going to be 9 people next to him. So the 10 people next to him would constitute the minyan. So they would actually hear his voice. And everybody else in the audience, it's okay that they don't actually hear his voice. As long as there are 10 people that are actually hearing the voice of the chazan and not through the speaker. Which is actually very interesting because in the last Yom HaShas, if you looked at the videos, which I did because I was interested, the way the chazan for Mincha was set up, he was by himself in his own little area. There's no way 9 people heard him davening. Everybody that heard him must have heard him through a speaker. That's just how it was set up. So I don't know what happened between one to the other, but it's interesting that apparently they changed their mind about whether or not they think you're allowed to use a microphone to daven, which is just interesting observation, I think. So that's really, so the Rabbi Shapiro and Rabbi Waldenberg is really the first position that I want to discuss tonight, which is that that when you blow into a microphone, all the positions that we discussed tonight are going to think that a microphone can be attributed to a human voice. You can fulfill your obligations with the microphone. The only exception to that rule is shofar, because shofar has a special requirement that there is no kol havara, which is a mixed sound. And again, we're not exactly sure what that means, but that was the position of Rabbi Waldenberg and Rabbi Shapiro. There is a much more liberal view presented by Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein is very interesting in regards to these issues because he has a couple of responses that all contradict each other. So it's very hard to know what exactly he thinks. In one place, this is the Simon over here, Lamagil, the one that's currently open. He thinks that, I apologize. This is Moshe Feinstein, right? He died in 1986. He was a prominent rabbi in the United States. He was the father-in-law of Rav Tendler, who was Rabbi Shor's personal rabbi. So he has, he's an important person to discuss in the show and everywhere really. But so the Rabbi Feinstein, in his first response, he's discussing whether or not there in halacha there are three types of people in general that we that we consider don't have knowledge. So if they don't have knowledge, then we can't fulfill obligations through them. Right? In general, in order for me to fulfill an obligation, I have to hear it from somebody else who's also obligated. People that aren't obligated are, for example, people that are psychiatric issues or some sort of mental deficiency that would prevent them from having a clear mind. Or exactly, the halachic definitions get very difficult when you have, as we have better understanding of these conditions. But broadly speaking, people that have some sort of deficiencies, then they won't be. We won't be able to fulfill an obligation by hearing them. Say a bracha or blow shofar or something of the sort. One of the people that fit that category in halacha was Cheresh, was a deaf person. Now, you know, that's understandable. It makes sense that in the times of the Gemara, if someone that couldn't hear anything, he was probably mentally incapacitated in some way because he wasn't able to function with society. There was no way to communicate with this person. The question now is, since we have remedies and we have ways of being able to assist them in being able to speak, are they now considered regular functioning members of society that we can then be able to fulfill our obligations by listening to them make the bracha or blow shofar or read Megillah or whatever the case may be? Right? Feinstein argues that since the way a hearing aid works is by converting, is microscopically, which basically means that what's happening here, there are sound waves being converted to electrical impulses, which are then converted back to sound waves. That whole thing is something that happens microscopically. In general, we have a halachic principle that things that happen microscopically are not relevant for halacha, unless their consequences are seen. What I mean by that is, for example, when you drink water, there are tiny little microscopic bugs in that water. That's not a problem when you're drinking water in halacha. It's microscopic. It's completely irrelevant. So Feinstein makes the same argument regarding the hearing aids. He thinks that since the person is hearing something that's being converted, it's microscopic, that person is considered someone that can't hear at all. He is considered deaf for halacha. In other words, he doesn't think that someone that is that is wearing a hearing aid, that we can fulfill any obligation by that. He doesn't think that's the human voice. He thinks it's completely irrelevant. And by that logic, if you use a microphone when I want to hear Megillah and I use a speaker over with that microphone, then I will not be able to fulfill my obligation of hearing Megillah. Before you get concerned, the second response from Rav Feinstein is specifically regarding using microphones for Megillah. And in that response, he explicitly says that it does work and that you can use a microphone, because he makes the case that any sound, this is a more philosophical argument, any sound that is produced by result of human intervention would be considered a halachic sound. So it doesn't matter if I speak and the sound is direct, you hear the sound directly from my voice, or if I speak and then that sound is picked up by a microphone, which then transmits it to a speaker, which then produces more sound, it's completely irrelevant. That is all halachic sound. And so it sounds like there's two responses from a Feinstein that disagree with each other. One of them would argue that a deaf person would definitely be considered being able to hear. The other one would disagree. So I want to make the case that they don't actually disagree with each other at all. I think the first Rabbi Feinstein just didn't understand how a hearing aid works, didn't understand what the deficiency was. I think the first Rabbi Feinstein, because he makes the case there that the person who is deaf, the reason why he can't hear is because he's neurologically impaired. It's biologically, it's just not accurate description. If there wasn't a neurological issue here, the person wouldn't be able to, the hearing aid wouldn't help. A hearing aid only helps because a person is able to technically hear. He just needs something to increase the volume in his ear. That's all the hearing aid is doing. The hearing aid is just basically a speaker in your ear that's just making the sound really loud, right? So for someone that can't hear a sound like most other people do, their hearing aid just makes it a little bit louder. So I don't think that, I think that the first Rabbi Feinstein's response was just based on a false assumption. And that really the second Rabbi Feinstein's response is the one that is more accurate. And that's really what he thinks. He believes that if someone, any sound that is a result of a person speaking can be attributed to that person. And therefore, if I speak into a microphone or if I blow a shofar into a microphone, it would all work. And that would be considered halachic sound, and a person would be able to fulfill his obligations that way. Did you raise your hand? I see a raised hand.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Which is of the two responsa is earlier, and how many years apart are they?
I don't know. I actually think I looked, if I recall. So the first one has a year, but the second one doesn't have a year. So I actually don't know the answer to that question. But that would be an interesting point. Correct. But I'm not sure. It could also be that people that sometimes you hear, these are the official printed responsa. sometimes the family has inner secrets that they know, and they know what everyone was thinking by which one. So it could be that maybe somebody else would be able to give us another insight of what they were thinking. But at least from just what's written, that's at least the impression that you get, or at least that I get. What's interesting with Ramosha's view, with Rabbi Feinstein's view, is that if any sound, let's, you know, if you're taking this, if you're going to take this logical, you want to take this to its logical conclusion, however absurd, that would be that any sound that's produced from a human voice is enough to be considered halachic sound. Therefore, if let's say I record myself blowing shofar and then play back the recording later, in theory, the person should be able to fulfill his obligation of hearing shofar if he plays back the recording. The only way the sound got into that recording was because I blew into it. I find he never limit. I'm not suggesting that he actually thinks this. I definitely don't think that he thinks this. I'm just saying he never limits his argument to specifically live. He never mentions that if you do it over a recording, that it shouldn't work. We do have, though, somebody who does, the Chazon Ish, which if we go back, he is right here, which is Rabbi Karelitz. He was a very important rabbi in Bnei Brak in Israel. He actually does not have his own response on this. He is quoted in the footnotes of Rabbi Orbach, who has a long essay on this, which will probably end up, considering how long this is taking, we'll probably end up discussing next week. It's the opposing view. But the footnote is for Rabbi Karelitz. He's really how we know what he thinks. But he makes the point that in order for sound, for this theory to work, that any sound that's produced because of human producing sound would be considered human sound, he limits that it specifically has to be immediately. He makes the case that that's the reason, and he makes the case that's the definition of kol havara. The reason why kol havara, an echo, isn't halachically okay for hearing shofar is because there's a delay between when I blow the shofar and when you hear the echo. It's not direct sound from the shofar. There is, whatever it is, that split second, that's good enough. And therefore, recording sound would be the same exact way. Recorded sound is obviously a delay, and therefore that wouldn't work either. I also want to point out that based on his presentation, that makes kol havara, it's not the rule, it's not the exception, it's the rule. Everyone else, right, the previous positions that we illustrated, all said that any other areas of halacha where someone's speaking, a microphone can work. There's something special by shofar because of kol havara. The Chazon Ish is making the case kol havara is true across the board, and it just happened to learn it by shofar. But across the board, we can't have this delay. This delay would be a problem. Now, Rabbi Frank, who Rabbi Tzvi Pesach Frank, he was the chief rabbi of Jerusalem at one point. As you can see, he and the Chazon Ish crossed paths. They had a lot of arguments about Shemitah and the like, Heter Mechira, conversation for a different time. But he was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim. And he makes a very similar argument to Ramosha Feinstein. He also thinks that any sound that occurs because a person is talking is considered halachic sound. And therefore, you can use a microphone for shofar. You can use a microphone for Megillah. For all those areas of halacha, it would be totally fine to have a hearing aid, have a microphone, etc. But he thinks that kol havara is something that is, the way he defines it at least, is something that's not a clear sound. An echo is not a clear sound. That's a problem with kol havara. Therefore, he makes the case that by Megillah, you're allowed to use a microphone because there is no issue of kol havara. But by shofar, since the sound isn't going to be so clear, then maybe you wouldn't be allowed to use a microphone to do for shofar. I would like to point out that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, as we see here, died in 1960s, right? If you hear any videos from that time, you hear the recordings from, you know, World War II speeches or later, whatever it is, right? The recordings are obviously not very clear. It's very clear difference between the speakers they had then and the speakers we have now. If his whole issue with using a shofar with a microphone, with a speaker, is that the sound isn't clear, it could very well be the case that he was only making that argument when the sound wasn't clear, when their speakers were really not very good quality. Our speakers now are much better quality. I don't know where exactly he would draw the line, but it could very well be that nowadays he would think that using a speaker with a shofar would be totally fine, and you would be able to fulfill your obligation of hearing the shofar. Now, there's Rabbi Orenstein. He was also a rabbi in B'nai Brak very recently. He very strongly believed that this was the correct position. Rabbi Frank's position, Rabbi Feinstein's position, the Chazon Ish's position, Karelitz's position. He thinks that this is the accurate way of thinking about these issues. And he has a couple of proofs that he mentions, which I think are a little bit questionable. So I'd like to just point them out to you and discuss them. First, he points out that there is the Ma'ari angle. He argues, he defines talking as vibrating air as a result of a person's interactions. In other words, it's a way of saying sound waves. Any sound wave that is produced because of a person talking is therefore going to be considered attributed to that person's voice. So I already seen that makes the case that after a person produces his sound waves based on this Ma'ari angle, after a person produces sound waves, it's completely irrelevant what happens next. They could be transmitted to electrical signal, which then transmitted back to a sound wave. Anything else can happen to it. What's important is that a sound wave was produced because of a person. Therefore, anything that happens next, he will be able to fulfill his obligation. You would fulfill your obligation. I want to point out that he's sort of skipping a step, right? Meaning, right, Ornstein is using this Ma'ari angle, which is an early source, to prove that this position is correct. But the Ma'ari angle never makes his case, right? Ma'ari angle only said was vibrating air as a result of a person talking. That's the definition of a person talking. That doesn't mean I can easily make the case that by a speaker, what's happening is the person that made the vibrating air the thing that made the vibrating air has to be a person. Alternative, right? The other option is that the speaker made the vibrating air. I have no proof from Marie Engel that a speaker that makes sound waves is considered can be attributed to a person. It's skipping a step. Was that clear? Okay. However, if he is correct, then any sound that is produced because of a person interference should be considered sound, right? But I'm just pointing out that the proof is a little shaky at best. He's sort of skipping a logical step. Another proof that he mentions is that there is this halacha by lulav. So when you shake the lulav and esrog, right, there's a rule, you have to shake it with your hands. You have to use muscular intervention, for lack of a better phrase, right, in order to make the lulav move. So there's a halacha that if that koach kocho, which means the strength of my strength, literally, is considered good enough by lulav. In other words, if I pick up some sort of stick or some sort of claw hand or something like that, and I move the lulav like that, then that would also be good enough to be considered that I'm shaking the lulav. That is the strength of my strength, right? In other words, I cause something else to make the lulav move. That's enough. That's good enough to be considered to fulfill my obligation of moving the lulav on Sukkos. Now he argues that. He makes the case that the same way that if I move something which then moves the lulav would be good enough, so too by speaking. If I speak, causing something else to amplify my voice, it's the same exact idea, and that would also be good enough. I like to point out as well that I don't think this proof is that great either, because there's totally two completely different requirements here that have nothing to do with each other. By lulav, you need some sort of muscular action. So it could very well be that the muscular rule in halacha is that anything that my muscles cause to be moved, even if it's not directly, would be considered moving. So in other words, if I move a stick, which then moves the lulav, that would be good enough to be considered shaking the lulav on sukkahs. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the same thing applies to talking. I don't have any proof just because muscular, halachic muscular movement has one set of rules. I can't really compare that to speaking, which could have a totally different set of rules. When I speak, causing something else to potentially convert that into electrical signal, which then converts into sound waves, that's not necessarily illustrative of halachic talking. I don't think one has anything, that he's comparing two things which have nothing to do with each other. So I don't think that's a very good proof either. He does have a third proof, which because of my introduction, I also don't think is relevant. But his third proof is that he argues that hearing is a neurological process. And therefore, it's irrelevant how the person heard the sound. What's important is that the person heard something. In other words, I have an obligation to hear a shofar. It's irrelevant how the sound of that shofar got to my head. The point is that my brain has to process the sound of a shofar. So he makes the case that I don't care what happens between when the sound wave is produced from the shofar to when my brain processes a shofar sound. What's important is that my brain processes that sound. Now, again, based on my introduction, it should, it's obvious why I think that this is not, I don't exactly understand what his proof is, because again, our problem is not hearing. Hearing is a fundamentally different question, right? Whether or not someone's hearing something or not, that's a question, that's halachic hearing, that has to do with, that's our next topic, right? Our problem over here is we have to understand when someone's, what is considered talking. The brain processed the sound that was produced by a speaker, potentially, I can make the case. It was processing a sound that was produced by a speaker, not a sound that was produced by a person blowing a shofar. If that is in fact the case, right, then there's really no proof from the fact that I process something that would be considered sound. I'll prove it to you, because if he is correct that what's important is that my brain processes a shofar sound, and it's irrelevant where the shofar sound came from. If I'm Rosh Hashanah, I have an hallucination that I hear someone blowing the shofar, or I have a dream and I hear someone blowing the shofar. No one will make the case that I have fulfilled my obligation of hearing shofar. Even my brain processed the shofar sound, but there was no, there's a requirement that someone that's obligated in mitzvot is the one that blows the shofar. There was no such thing here. That didn't happen. And so therefore, you definitely weren't fulfilling your obligation. So the fact that he's focusing on the neurological process of hearing, I don't think is relevant for our discussion of hearing aids. And so I don't think his proofs, I don't think are really prove this position, but they potentially maybe hint towards in that direction. But I wouldn't necessarily say that you know, would give us a good basis one way or the other of how to analyze this conversation on this topic. So that's really the second way of thinking about this. That is that it doesn't matter if we're talking about shofar or if we're talking about Megillah. Anytime that there's sound produced because of a person talking, that would be considered halachic talking. And therefore, I can use a microphone, I can use hearing aids for blowing shofar, for reading Megillah, or for davening, for any one of these things, and there wouldn't be any problem. This position of, potentially the position of Rav Feinstein, it's definitely the position of the Chazon Ish, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, and Rabbi Orenstein. There is a third way of thinking about this, and that is there's someone by the name of Rabbi Halpern. He was the head of the Institute of Technology and Halacha in Israel. He's very prolific, was a very prolific writer. He recently passed away. And he makes the case. So point out, first of all, Rabbi Halpern doesn't actually agree with this position. He thinks, like Rav Shlomo Zalman, which we'll discuss next time, he thinks that when you use a microphone that's not at all attributed to a human voice, it's a new sound. It's called an electrical sound. It has nothing at all to do with, he doesn't at all agree with these positions. But he does make the case in defense of these positions. He has an interesting argument, and that is that he defines kol havara, right, which is really our big topic for today. What is kol havara? He defines kol havara as any sound that is not originally produced by the person. In other words, by shofar, there's this unique halacha by shofar that it has to be the sound that was originally produced by the person. The person has to directly hear someone else blowing a shofar. Every other area of halacha has no such requirement. Every other area of halacha is totally fine with someone just with hearing a sound that was produced because of another sound. And he makes that case that kol havara is any sound waves which were not the original sound. So a sound wave which got converted to an electrical signal, which then made more sound waves. So for shofar, it wouldn't work. But for every other area of halacha, it would be fine. So really, that's Rabbi Halpern's position. So if we just look back on this, so first of all, I want to emphasize again that this is a very important area of halacha, the question that we're dealing with today, because potentially, if we don't accept the position that we presented this week, that we just talked about, then anytime someone wears a hearing aid, if he cannot hear shofar without the hearing aid, he won't fulfill his obligation of shofar. There'd be no point of him going to shul. If he can't hear someone reading the Megillah without his hearing aid, he won't be able to hear the Megillah. There would be no point in him going to shul to hear the Megillah. He won't fulfill any of these mitzvahs. So the positions that we presented this week all think, at least to some degree, that a hearing aid, that anytime you use a microphone and a speaker, they can be attributed to the person that's actually talking. And therefore, that is considered halachic talking or halachic speaking. Again, I'm making up these terms for lack of a better way of phrasing it. I hope it's descriptive enough and it's not confusing. That any time that a person speaks into a microphone, the sound that is produced is attributed to that person. The most liberal position of that would be what we mentioned from Rabbi Feinstein, Rabbi Karelitz, Rabbi Orenstein, and Rabbi Frank, that all sound that is produced because of a person talking would be attributed to that person. And so therefore, you can blow shofar into a speaker. If someone's wearing a hearing aid, he can use that hearing aid to hear the shofar. He doesn't have to remove it. And the more conservative view would be that of Rabbi Shapiro and Waldenberg, which think that it's a mixture of that anytime there's a mixture of sounds, whatever exactly mixture means, then you wouldn't be able to fulfill your obligation. And Rabbi Halpern thinks that if it's that that kol havara, at least, is anything that was, sorry, I apologize again, anything that's not the original sound is considered kol havara. And therefore, you can't use a speaker for shofar, but you can use it for everything else. So that's really the two ways, really, of thinking about whether or not you can use a microphone to fulfill your requirements, your mitzvot. Next week, what I want to analyze is the opposing view, which is really headed by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, and he's the one who thinks that anytime sound is produced by a speaker, then you won't be considered, we can't call that halachic sound, and that's not a person talking. In order to fulfill a mitzvah, you have to have a person, someone who's obligated in a mitzvah, produce the sound. And when you have a speaker, the speaker is producing the sound. It's not a person. And then you would have, and that's where you would have really that issue. And there's a couple of different ways to think about it. And there are a couple, and then after we discuss his position and the people that think similar to him, but not exactly the same, I also want to show how this conversation will also be relevant, since we're talking about halachic talking, is if, let's say, we have the Stephen Hawking situation, where the way he spoke was by speaking through some sort of, right, he has something connected, he either typed something up, he can't type, his brain, right, was connected to a speaker, at whatever, we'll get more details exactly how this works, but you basically have something, a device reading your thoughts, which is producing sound. Which is producing sound that's speaking. So depending on how we really think about how we define halachic talking here, not only will we have a way of thinking about hearing aids, which was the immediate question that everybody here is discussing, but we'll also have a way of thinking about how devices that replace vocal cords for people or people that are paralyzed and can't speak for whatever reason, how halacha would think about that. And this is really laying down the framework for that. After we discuss that, I'll just give you the heads up. I want to move next to halachic hearing, which is really the flip side of this conversation, which is sort of what we've been alluding to a little bit throughout this conversation, but specifically trying to avoid, right? And that is, as we said in the beginning, when a tree falls in the forest, our biologists would tell us it did not make a sound because no one heard it. So what is hearing in halacha would then be the next conversation. Thank you very much for listening. And please let me know if you have any questions. Please feel free to contact me. I'm very happy to respond in whatever form you would like.
Thank you very, very much. First of all, I wish you a full shleim. I'm the first one anything. Feel better. And not easy, but thank God. Thank God I got through it. Everybody, you have Rabbi Cohen's email on the chat. And if you misplace it, feel free to contact me and I can give it to you, to contact Rabbi Cohen. But we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 8:30. Okay. And if you have any other questions or ideas that maybe you want to, have a direction for Rabbi Cohen, feel free as well. Okay. Good. All right, everybody, have a good night. It's already, we were saying L'chun Arana this morning and in the Shir Shal Yom. Have a good Shabbos. Everybody be healthy. We might have my class tomorrow night, Thursday. Okay. So everybody be well. Take a Yashar Koyach again, Rabbi Cohen. We'll see you next week.
Thank you very much.
We'll be in touch.
Thank you very much.
Touch later this week. Take care. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Yeah. Bye.